Looks like Elvis did it. It's the news, according to me. Yeah. It is Monday. Monday morning, December 26th, the day after Christmas. 2 days after the day before Christmas. 3 days after the day before Christmas. If you can keep up with me. Keep up with me, folks. Welcome to the show. This is the show where I tell you that I'm not a doctor or a lawyer. I'm not a, something's weird with my voice this morning, too. I don't know what's going on with that. It's like I got something in my throat, but I can't, I don't know what's going on. Could be the issue of what I have in my cup. That could be part of the problem. What I have in my cup is not really something that will help me to clear my throat. Actually, it's probably going the opposite direction. I have chai. Once again, I have chai. Back to my old home studio here at the home office, not the world headquarters office, but the home office this morning. I got some chai, vanilla chai with vanilla creamer in it, the old organic vanilla creamer. It's almost gone. I've only got about a third of a cup left there. So this is going to be a short show. Not necessarily. It could be a short show. I don't know. I've got a couple things to cover. So I'm going to dive right in to the shallow end of the pool. I have, there's a lot of interesting things going on. But last week, I don't know if you heard last week that there was Tucker Carlson's show. He had a couple nights on his show where he really just blasted the FBI, the powers that be, some of the deep state bureaucrats, unelected bureaucrats, who are kind of running the show behind the scenes. And this is where it gets really, and I believe he also was blasting the administration pretty good with Karine Jean-Pierre. She just flat out lying to us. It has gotten to the point where I feel bad for her. You can tell she's uncomfortable with this stuff. I believe she loves her position. She loves the place of power and the place of being somebody. Has a name, made a name for herself now. Everybody knows who she is. Now, the problem I would find with that is that your name is associated with all the fabrication of just flat out lying all the time. And I don't know how you can... I just don't know how you can sleep at night with that kind of thing. There is this ability for people, humans have an ability it's rather remarkable. You can convince yourself for a while that what you're doing is the right thing, or that what you're doing is justified, even if you know you're doing something wrong. Because in the end it's for something good. Now, there are cases in Scripture where this happens, and Rahab, for instance, where a lie is actually, because it saved lives. You lied to save someone's life. A friend of mine has an example of this kind of a story. A woman goes running past you and says, "Help me, there's a man trying to attack me, a man trying to, you know." And the woman runs off and she goes, takes off and goes down to the right in this scenario, down the right hallway. And then the man chasing her appears. He says, "Which way did she go?" And you point to the left. Now, strangely enough, you don't know the whole circumstance there. And it, as far as you know, with the information you have, as far as you know, that the man is trying to attack her, and all you know is what she told you. Maybe she just stole the man's baby. Or maybe she just committed a murder. You don't know. You're just going by what you know. But what you're doing is you're averting the situation, giving this man, yeah, you're lying to the guy. But in theory, it is to protect a life. For all the information you know, as far as what you know, is you're trying to protect that person's life. In that case, that lie is fully justified. We live in a world of not so much cut and dry right and wrong. Well, I cannot tell a lie. She went that way. Well, that's great. Now, that's great. I could go way down a rabbit hole on that one. And I probably will someday, but I'm not going to do it. We're not going to do it today. this idea, but however, people, we have this sense of, I don't know, this idea that if we do enough good works, I've seen this so many times in the way we want to tend to balance things out in the scale of justice. People will do something bad or wrong, and they make amends with that by doing something, trying to do something right or a couple things right. They try to do a lot of good things to make up for the bad things that they've done. Now, it's a noble effort, I guess. But God doesn't see it that way. That's like going before a judge and you've committed murder, and the judge looks at your record and says, well, I know you committed murder here, but look at all the things you've done for society here. So we're going to go ahead and let you off. That's not justice. Not for the one who was killed, and not for the people who, the family that was involved in this. You know, that's not justice. And that's not going to be God. That's not God's justice either. Now, amazingly enough, He has taken upon Himself all of our sin, all of our misdeeds, all of our disobedience. And that we can't wrap our brains around that. I don't care who you are, how smart you think you are. That is a mind-boggling, when you really deeply think about it, which I don't think most people do. I think a majority of the people in the Western church, the Western culture church, I think a lot of them just believe that they belong, they have a membership to the right church, believes the right things. They're a member there, and that covers them. There you go. That's it. Some people even believe that just because they're American, they're Christian. It's the Messiah never really said anything about that. He did say some things about being in a relationship with Him, knowing His voice. And that can be confusing too. That's not about salvation. Salvation is putting all of your hope and trust and 100% of your hope and faith and trust in what He did on the cross. But people have this ability to somehow weigh themselves into a position of, maybe they don't feel good about what they did, but they can get over it. Because they know they're a good person. See, there's a lot of people in the world that believe there's two ways of doing things. There's the wrong way and their way. And I'm no Jordan Peterson here. I can't, you know, I'm not going to sit here and articulate a bunch of neurophysical, physicist, physicianal stuff, because I'm not one. I'm not a neuropsychologist. I can't juggle either. I can't do that. But all these things it's just very interesting how people put this stuff together. But getting back to the whole point of this whole thing, what I'm saying is, I don't know how Jean-Pierre, can live with herself. And you can see it in her eyes, or what she does with her eyes when she's trying to answer some of these tough questions. People ask her a tough question. She looks down with her eyes closed, like she's trying to read from something, because she's looking for something, for some securities, for something of substance that she can rely on. She has to make this stuff up as she goes. Her eyes are kind of half closed, and her eyelids are twitching. This is not the sign of someone who is looking you directly in the face and giving you a straight answer. This is the eyes of someone who is 10 years old, who's trying to make up a story for who ate the cake. And I don't know how you continue to go on day after day like that. At some point, realizing that the whole thing's a sham. You're a fraud. The border is secure. The border is secure. Well, you know, the previous administration broke the border. The problem was the previous administration. These policies were a mess. Really? We didn't have the same issue going on back then that we do now. What has changed? The administration and the policies of this administration. That's what's changed. And all of a sudden we have this issue. Well, it's not an issue. The border's secure. We're processing everybody. But we need more funds to process the border. They just want to let people in, and they're dumping them in red states. If you don't think this is being done on purpose, if you don't think this is part of their plan politically to keep themselves in power, it's about their power. They believe, they've convinced themselves that if they lose power, that the democracy's gone. Now, I just heard someone say this morning. It was actually Robert Govea. He's a lawyer, criminal lawyer. I was listening to the case of Carrie Lake, as well as what's going on with the FBI files. I think Drop 9 now has come down. And he was covering both those things, well, some other things. And he made the statement, and I've made this statement before as well. And I think I was glad to hear him say it, because it really is important that the people in the United States understand this principle, because that's not what we get from our government. Our government tells us that their government lives on a hill in this temple. It's a hill in the middle of a swamp that apparently literally was built in a swamp. That's where our democracy resides. It's the temple of democracy, the hallowed halls. And for some reason, they think that the government is Mitch McConnell, Chuck Schumer, Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi, Kevin McCarthy. They are the government. They're not the government. They forget that they swear an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution. They turn around and spit on it by forgetting and denying, or not even acknowledging, that it is for, of, and by the people. They just represent us. They aren't the people. We are. They just represent our rights. They represent us in order to protect our rights as individuals. not to lord over us and tell us what to do. Period. And yet that seems to be all they do 24 hours a day. They want to be our parents now. They feel like it's their duty. And you don't dare push back against them, or you'll be socially ostracized through back channels with government bureaucracies like the FBI and the CIA operating through social media now. They can control you through. It used to just be regular media, the news organizations, the television news. Now it's much more direct. It's right there in your hand. It's in your phone, the thing you carry with you everywhere you go. You feel naked without it. They're following along with everything you're doing now. And we seem to be okay with that. There are people, it surprises me, the number of people who want big government, who want government to take over certain programs like their health insurance and all kinds of other things. At the very same time, these same people are mad about the corruption in government. Yeah, that's the problem with putting it in the hands of these bureaucrats. At some point, we need to get it. You know, this idea that big government is not the answer. More government control is not the answer. What government does sometimes in the name of protecting us is their excuse for controlling us. What's best for the collective? That's not their job. It has nothing to do with the founding of this nation. It has nothing to do with the Constitution and what it was built on. And yet all day long they're telling us that, well, if you know, you're an insurrectionist, you're opposed to the Constitution if you say this or that. No. That's part of the First Amendment. There's an organization called, well, I'm going to get into that right now. Let's talk about the Kerry Lake, Arizona situation. The judge in the case, as I had said before, was biased. Now, his ruling was not necessarily biased. However, the decision is going to be appealed, and I think they're going to have a better chance at it next time. There's a dilemma that they've fallen into with this whole situation, where the judge, they cannot quantify the effect that the disruption of half, more than half, of the tabulators, the ballots not being able to be read by the tabulators. They can't quantify, because they can say, well, even though the tabulators couldn't count them, we could hand count them later. They were put in the drawer number 3, which I think was actually a shredder. It's right next to the shredder with a big 3 on it. Look, the left played the game. They knew what was going on. They knew that most conservatives vote on election day. They know that. They know that most leftists vote. Not that doing one way or the other is bad. It's just that most leftists vote, or let's put it this way. Most Democrat votes come in through mail-in ballots and early voting. That's how most Democrat votes come in, because of harvesting and nefarious activity that goes on with the mail-in balloting. If you eliminated mail-in balloting and early voting and put everybody on the same playing field of election day votes, well, you wouldn't have these problems, I bet you. They'd come up with something else. So when you slow down, when it takes an hour or two I think the average time, I think, to get to vote, I think, in Arizona that on election day was 45 minutes. Now, I don't know what's going on in my chair here. So now, when you stop and think about this, I'm wrestling with my chair. It's like I'm sitting on a bear. When you have these election issues, when you have these ballots, you got to wait in line that long. Well, people who have a job, they're taking off for lunch, go down and vote. Or they have kids they have to deal with. Or they just have a busy life. A lot of them aren't going to stand in line for 45 minutes just to find out that their vote ballot isn't working and then you might have to go somewhere else. So now you drive around somewhere else, try to find parking. You go in and try to vote. Again, the line's 40 minutes long. I mean, you may have experienced this at one point, maybe just trying to get food at a restaurant. Go to a restaurant, 45-minute wait. Well, let's go over to the other place. Let's leave our reservation in here. We'll go to the other place. So you spend 15 minutes driving over to the other place. You park. You get, you know, put your name in. 30-minute wait. Well, it took us 20 minutes to get over here. And about the time it's almost time for you to get called here, the other place calls and says, hey, we've got a seat for you. Of course, now you're still waiting on this other one. You've been better off at the first one. You didn't know that. It's kind of like when I go to a place like that, I'm like, if I put our name in, it's like, you know what? We'll just stay here. I'm not going to fart around going different places. Just because I might save 10 minutes. You may get a seat in 10 minutes. I mean, 30 minutes before you get waited on at the other place. You don't know. By the time the end of the day, you know, you drive around and do all the, you know, the fussing around of doing all that stuff and trying to, it's just stay where you are. Wait it out. At least now you can usually call in and put your name in a list because the whole COVID thing at least gave us those facilities. Places that don't take reservations, you can put your name on the list prior to even getting there. But so we have that going on. What happened with this whole thing is you have a hard time quantifying how many people were disenfranchised or turned away. Personally, what I think Carrie should do, she should go out, she should put a call out to all the people who didn't vote because of the malfunctioning tabulators or the ballots that were screwed up. Call them all in as witnesses. Have every single one of them testify. The trial would take about 3 years. Just have them all come in and testify. I was going to vote, but I didn't. I'm a disenfranchised voter because this. Next one would come in and say the same thing. You'd have a line a mile long giving testimony for days and days. At some point, the judge would just have to say, okay, this affected the election. You know, it amazes me that the principles by which they, you know, there's in criminal law, and I'm not a lawyer, but I do listen to one on YouTube, and it's an interesting thing, a situation. In criminal law, the burden of proof is upon the prosecution. If there is even a reasonable doubt in criminal law, then the judge or the jury must acquit. It has to be beyond a reasonable doubt. That is not the case in civil lawsuits. It's very different. I just had a major sneezing moment. You might have thought I was pausing for dramatic effect. There, I was actually sneezing my head off. Had the mute button on. I hope I put the mute button on. Either that or you got an earful. There's different standards under civil law. Now, under this particular law, the judge noted that the plaintiff has complete and utter burden of proof. You have to prove everything, and there has not just that something bad happened, but they have to prove, because that's they proved that. They had witnesses that definitely showed that, and it's even documented that this whole thing was screwed up. What they can't prove is intent. Well, there was no intent on anyone's. And by the way, they tried to fix it. They called people in to fix the problem. Therefore, that means that they didn't mean for it to happen. Okay, so if I'm stabbing someone accidentally, this could happen. I mean, Dick Cheney shot somebody when he was out hunting with him. He might have been the one to call 911. He didn't intend to kill the guy. He didn't kill the guy. It was bad injury. He's out quail hunting, surprisingly enough. Not Dan Quayle. He's out quail hunting with this guy, and he accidentally shot him. Now, in the meantime, they get him to the hospital and all that stuff. He's okay. So did he intend to kill him? No, he didn't intend. He didn't kill him, so he didn't intend to kill him. Was there criminal intent there? No, probably not. Was there liability? Absolutely. Was there negligence? Absolutely. Was there criminal negligence? Probably. If you mishandle something, there's plenty of people who've been sued for negligence and criminal negligence, as well as not just negligence, but also what is the other term? It's like a misuse or something like that. That's not the word, but I could tell you if I was a lawyer, but I'm not a lawyer. Were you? It's malicious, not malicious. Malicious means you have some kind of intent. Just the mishandling, the reckless. I guess it's reckless and reckless something. Reckless endangerment. I guess that's a term. Where you're doing something and you're being reckless about it. Driving your car, you're perfectly, you're sober. You're just driving around and you're doing screwy things with your car, doing donuts in the middle of an intersection, doing, chirping the tires, squealing the tires, whatever you're doing. That's reckless endangerment, you can call it. It's not negligence. You weren't doing something uneducatedly. You were doing something that was just reckless. Somebody is to blame for this thing, but they can't quantify the effect that it had on the election. We're talking about an election that had fewer than 20,000 votes difference. Do you think that by screwing up half of the tabulators, more than half, 15, I think it was 59% overall, that's what one of the observing lawyers that day said. Their estimate is about 59% of the tabulators were messing up, the ballots were messing up. Couldn't read the ballots. The ballots themselves were coded differently the night before. Really? You knew the election was coming up, and you couldn't test these ballots? Well, no, because we had to print them the day before and stuff, and had to recode the printing on them, so that was, because we didn't realize the election's tomorrow. We better finish this. I had to wait till the last minute in case any new candidates popped in. Absolutely intentional. They couldn't call in. The problem is with this situation is that Carrie Lake's lawyers, her defense or her situation is they don't have any discovery in this. When you're on the defense, you can go in and get discovery and all this stuff. You can't do that in this situation. She can't go in and subpoena people for records, all the records, all the stuff that was going on. Now they did; they were able to get text messages and some of the other emails and things that were being passed around because there were people inside the election system who were getting some of these emails, and they brought them forward voluntarily. They couldn't subpoena these things. This is how we know that they were having all these issues. And that the people involved knew the issues were happening. So we know this is like saying, well, they can't deny the fact that there was a truck accident, for instance. But if you can't investigate the truck and find out who was driving, and there's no record of any drug test, there's no record of any investigation into mechanical failure. You have no idea what caused the accident. Or you might even know what caused the accident, but you don't know if they did it intentionally or not. Or who the person was. The brake lines were cut. Oh, what cut them? Was it somebody at the last truck stop, or was it somebody at the last mechanic, or who was it that cut them? Well, we're not going to get into that. Somebody cut them, and we know there was a person involved in doing that, but we're not going to let you talk to that person. That's kind of the situation they're in right now. They can't deny that there was screwed up things with the election, because that obviously happened. And the judge, I think the judge, probably his ruling is correct in this situation. They did not make a strong enough case, partially because their hands are tied in their ability to get the information that they need, the people that they need to call forward as witnesses. And then you get in a situation where the witnesses themselves, if they are trying to cover themselves, cover their tracks, they're not going to admit to any of this. The sad part about this is there's no case precedence in this, and there never will be, because this is the kind of thing that happens all the time. The ruling tends to favor however the election was certified. Judges don't want to step into the situation where they overturn an election. This is probably the closest anyone's come in a long time to overturning an election like this. I mean, we'll see how it goes. She's going to appeal it, and maybe there will be some new evidence introduced into the court. I don't know how they're going to do that, but I think the main thing is that they're getting out the information of how screwed up the Arizona election system is. On top of this, you have her opponent is in charge of the elections in Arizona. She would not recuse herself from taking control of the election, from being the supervisor in chief of the elections. Oh, nothing. You know, nothing could go wrong there. Trust me, I'm totally honest. Oh, I won. Oh, gee whiz, by 16,000 votes. Oh, yeah. Interesting case recently where an election was overturned. I'm not sure exactly. I couldn't find out if it was a state house or if it was a U.S. House of Representatives. The election was overturned by one vote in a recount. One vote. How convenient. You don't think your vote counts. Think again. Twitter drop number 9 came out on Christmas Eve. Merry Christmas. Santa paid a little present to us. Elvis somebody. Um, know what that's all about. Dogs are barking. Elvis Chan. Maybe it's Elvis Chan. Let's see if this is it. Elvis Chan. Yeah, Elvis Twain. He's the controversial FBI agent Elvis Chan denies claim that he warned Twitter. 5 days ago, FBI agent Elvis Chan denied in a deposition that the FBI ever mentioned Hunter Biden's laptop as part of the possible hack and leak Operation View Gallery. Part of the problem here is the Elvis Chan that they have found Twitter emails, back channel communications with the FBI. Now you have to understand, the FBI was pressuring Twitter, which is what's really bizarre about this, is that the FBI was so entrenched in what was going on with Twitter. And then a lot of the individuals who are working for the FBI, the Twitter actually had a liaison individual with the FBI. So there was like a contact person. The FBI wanted access to Twitter to edit things directly. And the next best thing to that was to have their own inside people in Twitter doing that for them. This is where James Baker comes in. James Baker was working for the FBI and ended up working at Twitter. There's no evidence, there's no indication that James Baker ever went off payroll with the FBI. He was never terminated. There's no resignation. Let's see it, James. Produce it. And he's working for Twitter. And then he got fired. When Elon Musk found out what was going on, he fired him. Oh, this poor guy. And of course, the left-wing media just stands up for the guy. Oh, look, Elon Musk came in just eliminated this perfectly good, upstanding man. Remember what they said about James Comey? Remember how the left turned on him at one point? When he came out and said something about Hillary Clinton, where we're reopening an investigation on Hillary Clinton. Oh, the left-wing media went nuts over the guy. Maxine Waters came out and said, the FBI director has zero credibility, and she stormed off the stage. A few days later, they closed the investigation. Of course, James Comey was the one who was in the middle of the whole Russiagate thing. And all of a sudden, James Comey was the darling of the left again. If we ever saw a perfect example of how you comply, you're the star child. If you say anything against them, you are the devil. Think about the guy who was the lawyer for Stormy Daniels. The left-wing media was fawning over this guy to the point where they just thought he should be the next president. He should run for president. We're going to put him up as a candidate. He's in jail now, by the way. Michael Cohen was one of Trump's lawyers. Michael Cohen went, I think he actually served time for what he did. He was involved in that whole thing. He's a regular, everyday contributor on CNN now. Or maybe it's MSNBC. It's one of the two. I think it's CNN. Contributes almost daily on those networks. He's a disgruntled Trump employee. Anybody that can get a disgruntled Trump employee, they plaster them all over the place. Gee, you think maybe because they got fired by Trump, maybe they got like an agenda, a bias, maybe a little bit? They give these people a platform. They parade them around as if they're some kind of credible. And every day, for the last 5 years, Michael Cohen has said, Trump's going down for this. He's going down for that. He's going down for this. Oh, yeah, they're going to get him for this. He's going to jail for this. Every day, that's what he says. He just keeps injecting that into people. It's like a drug for these people. They just want somebody outside their little sphere to say that Trump's going to jail. If all you have to do is get on, just call up CNN and say, yeah, I've got evidence that, you know, it's going to put Trump away for life. You'll be on that night. I guarantee you. They'll fly you to whatever studio they need to have you at. And you'll be on, and you can tell your story. And it can be the most, just ridiculous thing. You may have never met Trump in your life. Never worked for him at all, but you have this information. Oh, we're going to plaster you all over the place. It's because this is, it's still, of course, now very quickly, Elon Musk is becoming, he's kind of fitting into the Trump villain part. Because they have to have this, there's this self-aggrandizing thing where they come into this whole situation where they have to show their righteous vigor. It's kind of like the whole, there's just the whole wokeness stuff too. It's just this, it kind of blends in with that whole thing. It's just kind of this big mess of stuff where they have this phony self-righteousness, this phony set of morals that changes all the time, by the way. And depending on what they're talking about, it can have, it's abject collage of morality. It's just, there's nothing. In fact, that recently there was this, it was interesting, this one guy was confronting this college student about, maybe I can find this. I probably can't because it was a couple days ago. it was an interesting, well, here it is. It was an abortion argument. And this kid is coming kind of arguing for abortion. And they're giving these weird statistics of why abortion should be okay, and they're all, she's armed with these statistics that she was told by her professor. So she thinks she's real smart. These little 20-year-old, 20-something kids that are, think they know it all because somebody else told them something. And she's arguing with this guy, and she finally comes up with this whole thing of how, you know, abortion is okay and stuff. And then this guy brings it right back around to, the vast majority, I mean, it's over the per capita numbers of abortions happen within the Black community. Yeah, from African-American people of color, whatever we're supposed to call them now. I didn't bring it up. The leftists brought it up. They're always the ones with the right woke statement. I don't know. People who have dark skin. Okay, that's, there you go. I don't know how else to say it without. Those people that they point out all the time, that they're the ones who would like to make the distinction of, which is fine. If they want to be they want to distinguish yourself that way, that's fine. I've got plenty of brothers and sisters in the human race who do not like that at all. They don't like to be pigeonholed into a people group like that. Because they know better. They know that that's the game that the social controllers play. They fall right into it with the whole thing, and they got all the right stuff that they say. And white privilege is a part of that whole mix of stuff. It's all meant to divide us. That's all it's meant to do. And if you're going down that road, that's, you're part of the division. We've got to work past that stuff. But I digress. So So this issue that comes up is where they, I remember what it was, I lost my train of thought. Oh, the abortion issue thing. The vast majority of them are people of color, minorities. And somehow this guy that was talking to her brings it back around to then what you're saying is you're a racist. What you're saying is you're racist because you think that more people should be aborted. And it was interesting. I mean, it was kind of a stretch the way this guy pulled it off, but it did work. Because obviously the person was not. And they're going down two different moral roads. You know, this is what they'll do. They have, we can only talk about this stuff in this particular sense, in this context. But if you get into this context, then it has to be a different thing. Different standards over here than it are over here. And that's what we run into. And that's the beauty of what God's law is about. How God sees right and wrong. It is a law outside of ourselves and how we feel about it. It's not based on every man doing what's right in his own eyes. That's which is where we are today. There's nothing new under the sun, folks. Our society and our civilization has not escalated to a point beyond which Scripture cannot speak. Because man's basic human issues, at the root core of it being selfishness, are still there. Now, I want to bring this up. It's kind of late in the show, and I was going to bring this up in a whole segment all by itself. And maybe I'll spend the last 10 minutes here talking about this. I have noticed, I observe a lot of people in their work. I travel around a lot. I don't know if you've noticed that or not. This week, I'm not traveling, by the way. Well, I'm not planning on it. If something could happen, I might end up having to travel. I don't know. Not more than an hour drive or so, but I'm all over the country, typically, at least east of the Mississippi, sometimes west, but not most of the East Coast, up and down, all over. I'll be in Dallas next week, be in Atlanta and Dallas. And then probably up in Appleton for a week. I haven't been up there for a while. I'll be up there the week following that. I think on the 8th, I will be up there. Now, having said that, that's the plan anyway. I don't know if it's going to work or not. I'll be spending a lot of time down in Dallas, probably in February and March, and then hopefully get some time off after that. So, in the meantime, in fact, I don't know how it's going to work. So, in the meantime, I have an interesting situation here, in that I get to observe a lot of people in their jobs, in their work, in service industries, whether it's the food service, travel, hotels. Places that don't necessarily, I've spent a lot of time in my early years of working, my first jobs that I had were involved in manufacturing. And whether or not I was involved directly in the manufacturing part of it, I was always involved in companies that were manufacturing companies. In other words, I had a job at one time that was I was in the parts department, parts and shipping. And I had a unique situation where I would travel around in the plant complex and I would pick up parts off the line. And so I would observe people working, you know, on the line. We called it the line. They were building recreational vehicles, trailers, campers. We were manufacturing those things. So I would get to go around all these different places, pick up parts off the line we try to stock some of the things in our little warehouse there, but most of the things were just out there. We just have to ride the golf cart around. We pick up all these parts and then we ship them out to people. And it was interesting to watch and observe some of these people on the line, how they worked. And over the years that I was there, it was interesting. Then we worked in a service department where I did a little bit of the same thing. I occasionally had to go out on the line and find some things, but in the service department itself, we had a repair facility for these campers. And I worked in that department for a while. And that was an interesting job as well, to see how people worked with each other and how they worked, just in their own quality of work. So now I have this opportunity to travel around the country and see people working, how they, are at their jobs. Now, I've seen people, this is interesting, there's all kinds of directions I could go with this, but the one thing that really stands out to me when I watch people work is that you can tell some people don't like their job. They don't want to be there. There seems to be a sense of, I would call it entitlement, that they feel like they're in a job where they deserve better. But their job isn't important. And they really should be they should be doing something else. Why are they here? Kind of thing. That's this mentality that seems to be very predominant in their attitude about the work that they do. I was recently at a pizza place in an airport, so something as simple as that. And the lady who was, they put the pizza in one side of the oven, pizza comes out the other side of the oven. She was responsible for putting the pizza in a bag and calling out people's numbers. So she would call out a number. She wouldn't, she was wearing a mask, of course, because, that's the right thing to do. By the way, we'll get to that. So she's wearing a mask, so you can't hardly hear her anyway. You can't understand people wearing a mask. It's like, that's the way it sounds to me anyway. Noisy place. People everywhere making lots of noise. There's three different restaurants in this little food court area. Everybody's yelling out numbers and yelling stuff and talking and dishes clanging, all kinds of stuff going on. Television's playing and phones ringing. People, just a lot of racket, let alone the pizza oven fans and all the other stuff that's going on. Well, in the middle of all this, she calls out people's numbers. And I kid you not, about as loud as this, 472, it literally was that loud. She would say it usually she would, and then the other person over working at the other part of the little food stand thing there would yell it out. I'm not even going to do it because it would blast your ears out. She would get really loud. Well, once in a while, she wouldn't hear the other lady saying the number 472. She wouldn't hear it. So, and then she'd stand over there with the pizza, look around, 472. Couldn't hear her. I was standing literally right next to where she was, and I could barely hear what she was saying. And she'd she would take that pizza, and she would put it up on top of the oven and just set it there. There were probably four or five of them there. Now, there are people standing around. There were a lot of people standing around before I got there. And they had, of course, depending on what cash register, there's an automated ordering thing that you go to. There's like three of them there. And depending on which one you went to, you had a different number. So I think mine was 471, I think, actually. But there was also 322 and 5-something else. It's like, so you didn't know where you were in the count. Well, my 471 with, and there's like a 382 over there. And so I got 100 people, like 90 people in front of me yet. Or is it over here? I missed my number. I'm not sure. They didn't really tell you where to stand either. It didn't tell you where to pick up their pizza. Initially, I was kind of standing back, kind of waiting for somebody to call my number, and I didn't hear anything anywhere. So I went over to where it looked like they were, might, you know, where the pizzas come out. And that's, I was standing there. A lot of people were sitting around all over the place. And I realized that I was there for like 30 minutes. And I realized that after a while that there were a lot of these people who were there were waiting on their pizza. And there was probably people there who hadn't even heard their number and their pizza was done. These are people who are traveling. They got to catch a flight. It's a little bit unnerving. So finally, she comes out with mine. Now, in observing her this whole time, it was very obvious she didn't think her job was very important. She didn't like her job. She didn't take it seriously. And you know, I never know if it's just God speaking to me or if it's just wisdom. I don't know what it is. When I observe something like that, and I realize, you know what? Your job is only important if you realize it's important. Your job is what you make of it. If you don't think your job is important, then it's not. Here's the reason it's important. Because it's important to you. It's important to you that you do a good job at your job. That's why it's important. If you're doing something, this I think scripture bears out with this. All this whatever you set your hand to doing, do with all your heart, as unto the Lord. If God, if somehow in your life you find yourself cleaning a toilet, you make that the best toilet cleaning job you've ever done. Or whatever it is that you think is the lowest of the lowest of jobs. Shoveling horse manure, whatever it is, you shovel that horse manure with all your heart. Be the best horse manure shoveler there is. And the reason it's important is because it's important to you. And now all of a sudden, you realize that that job is important. You are serving mankind in some way or another. I think I gave this a lot of things that we experience throughout the day and in our lives. Attitude has a lot to do with it. Having a good perspective, a good attitude has a lot to do with it. I am not a runner. I hate running. I just hate it. I'd much rather be riding a bike. I don't like exercise in general, but I do feel better after when I exercise. And I have to say, having gone through a long stretch of time where I didn't really exercise much at all, and exercising again on a regular basis has once again left me feeling, I don't want to go back to that feeling I had before, when I wasn't exercising. I feel so much better. Kind of like I'm living, I may not be an 18-year-old anymore, but I feel like I'm living my best life because I feel better. Even if I were had a disease and I was dying, I still want to feel better through that whole process, the best I can feel through that whole process. And I think that, just being able to run. Now, I realized that, I think I've mentioned this before on the show, it beats the alternative. I know people half my age who kind of hobble around because of whatever. They had an injury, or they just have a defective whatever, knee, hip, joint, whatever they got going on. And they have a hard time just going up and down stairs. They take the elevator just for one flight of stairs. And that's nothing to say against them. It's just I feel like I need to appreciate the fact that I can run. I need to celebrate every step on that sidewalk. And now I go out to run. And I literally give thanks for every step. And I find myself smiling as I'm going down the sidewalk. I celebrate the fact that I can run. I may not always be able to do that. And I want to be thankful for every moment I have that I can. And that changes everything. How many times you drive down the road and you see somebody out running down the sidewalk or down the road, and they're out jogging for their exercise, and they have a big old smile on their face? Now, you don't see that very often, do you? Usually it's a grimacing, kind of a painful, I'm not enjoying this kind of look on their face. Well, I'm going to enjoy it because I can. Just by the fact that I can do it for now. And maybe I won't always be able to do that, but I'll be able to do something else. I'm going to try to have that attitude of being thankful and enjoying and celebrating every moment that I can do something. And maybe it'll come down to the end of my life and I'll just be thankful for every breath I can take. I don't know. I don't know how that's going to end. I don't know how my last days will be, or my last moments will be. But I hope that I have an attitude of celebration. Certainly not one of regret. I have plenty of things in my life that, as I hear people say, oh, I have no regrets, no regrets. Bull. Then you have no self-awareness. There are plenty of times, I've chosen selfish motives for making decisions. I regret those. I regret them, absolutely regret them. There are decisions that I've made that I regret having made because of the way they've affected other people. I regret that. If you have no regrets, then you have no ability. You have no understanding, no awareness. Not unless you've lived a perfect life. You've never done anybody wrong or even accidentally done anybody wrong. I'm not going to brush that off and take it lightly. I'm sure that in the future, I'll probably make bad decisions again. Hopefully, I will learn from them. But I can't guarantee that. I might have more regrets in the future. Who knows? I might regret having done this podcast. Who knows? I doubt it. But I might. I don't know. Who knows? It could happen. I don't know. So, we're in that weird stage right now between Christmas and New Year's. We're winding down one year and starting up another. We're almost at the, let's look at this. I should probably look at this real quick. You don't know what I'm looking at, but I'm going to look at the, here we go, podcast files. Let's see how many episodes there have been. I believe we're on 493, something like that, somewhere around there. Yeah, 496. This will be 497. This episode is 497. So we're going to have 500 episodes here. We're going to have a big 500 episode party here in a couple days. God bless everybody. Have a great new year. Hope you had a Merry Christmas. Take care. Thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing.